Hello, this is Eddie Duke. Welcome to the weekly podcast at Panther Creek Baptist Church. You know, Jesus Christ is an amazing person. As I look at our culture today, I'm convinced the absolute only hope for this world in which we live is Jesus Christ. And every week, I will introduce you to messages that will communicate this hope that we have in Christ. I'm thankful that you've taken the time to catch us here this week. It means a lot to me that you would tune in, and I would love to hear from you. And now, here is this week's broadcast. Before we get into Revelation 14, I just don't think I did Revelation 13 justice last week. And I just want to touch on that before we get into 14 tonight so we understand 13 and what 13 was about. Just essentially, just to sum up Revelation 13. All along, as we've been talking about this, there has been a person that's been in the background. This first 3.5 years of the tribulation, everything's going to be relatively quiet. There's not a lot going on because the world seems to be coming together. There seems to be peace. There seems to be order. And this Antichrist in this first 3.5 years is the one that is responsible for that. And he's going to gather a great following because people are going to look to him and say, man, what a great leader. He's able to bring the world together in a very turbulent time, in a very chaotic time. And so that's what he has been doing. Chapter 13 is about two people. It is about the Antichrist, this person who's a governmental leader that will be ruling the world kind of during this time. And we talked about how the Antichrist is referred to the Antichrist for a reason, because he tries to do everything that Jesus does, but he always comes up short. And that's really Satan. You know, Satan wants to be God. He tries to be God in everything, but he always comes up short. And so that's what we see. And so Satan will be controlling this Antichrist, and he'll be a governmental leader. He'll have power. He'll rule the governments of the world. I'm sorry, having some issues here with my mic. And then chapter 13 also identifies there'll be another person on the scene, not just the Antichrist, but someone known as a false prophet. Now, whereas the Antichrist will be in control of the government, this false prophet will be in control again. This false prophet's controlled by Satan, but this false prophet will be controlled, will control commerce and economics. And we talked about how that the end of chapter 13 says that everything economically will be controlled by the mark of the beast, which is 666, that number on the forehead or number on your hand. That's the only way you're going to be able to buy or sell. You know, I went to Sam's Club before I came here tonight, you know, and you got to put in your Sam's Club card, and then you got to put in your form of payment into that reader, and it reads all that. Make sure that you have the money in the bank where you can make that purchase. Well, in the future, guess what? During this tribulation time, we won't have any of that. We'll have an opportunity just to stick our hand out there to be scanned if you have the number 666, and that can be read in order for all commerce to take place. And so this false prophet will be in control of that. So chapter 13 is really about those two individuals. You have the false prophet who's kind of controlling commerce and economics, and then you have the Antichrist who's in controlling all other government functions. Now we come into chapter 14 and we hear back from the 144,000. Probably you're wondering, what in the world happened to the 144,000? And when we talked about them earlier, we said since for a long time, there have been church groups and religious organizations that have tried to lay claim to this 144,000. One group in particular that we know of has been Jehovah's Witness. Jehovah's Witness, that's how they were founded. They were founded upon the basis that we are going to be the 144,000 that will be going around the world proclaiming Christ during the tribulation time. Well, when they got to 144,000 in their denomination, their following, and Jesus Christ still hadn't come back, that wasn't working for them so much anymore. So they had to revise that, and they had to kind of change that up a little bit. But it's not Jehovah's Witness, and we talked about this before. What it is, it's the Jewish evangelist, zealots, people with a lot of zeal, people that are very dynamic, and they are going around, and they are telling people about Jesus Christ. They are sharing the gospel, this 144,000. Now, in these first 3 or 4 verses here in chapter 14, what we're looking at is something known as proleptic. Proleptic. And what that means is you're looking at it in the past, but it's also into the future.
because this 144,000 that we're looking at now are now in heaven. So they've been involved during the tribulation time, but now they are going to be in heaven. And this is how we see them here in the 144,000 is in heaven. Verse 1, chapter 14, I know I had a long lead in there, but we'll catch up now. Chapter 14, verse 1 says this, "Then I looked, and there was the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with Him were 144,000 who had His name and His Father's name written on their foreheads." So you see, it's just the anti-antichrist because this is the mark of Christ that they have. Verse 2 says, "I heard a sound from heaven like the sound of cascading waters." We've seen that before in the book of Revelation. "And like the rumbling of loud thunder. The sound I heard was like harpists playing on their harps." You know, it's interesting to me that there are some places, there are some denominations that believe, you know, we should not have instruments. We shouldn't have that in our music displays. But that's exactly what we're going to have in heaven. We have that, and they are playing harps, they are playing music. And verse 3 says, "They sang a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and the elders." The elders are, again, the church. They are the redeemed. They are us. They are the ones that were raptured to miss the tribulation. "But no one could learn the song except the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the earth." Let me stop right there for a moment, because the Bible says they sang a new song. What would it take in order for us to sing a new song? I know when I've read the Gettys before, John and Steve, and the Gettys say, essentially, we only sing two songs. There's only two types of songs that we ever sing in congregations or any time that we get together at church or revivals. There's always only two songs that we sing, two types of songs. The testimony song, a song of testimony, and a song of praise. Those are the only two types of songs we really sing in church, a song of testimony or a song of praise. Now, what's the difference between the two? Well, a song of testimony is a song about God, but a song of praise is a song to God. And we could change any of those. You know, like an example of a song of testimony, I guess, would be, "He is Lord. He is Lord." How does "He is Lord" go? John, I could sing it, but I'm being recorded. Steve, do you remember? "He is Lord. He is Lord. He is risen from the dead, and He is Lord. Every knee shall bow, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord." Okay, so that's you made me do it anyway, didn't you? Doug got it. Can we erase that, Doug? Off? Oh, shoot. So that is a song of testimony. Now, we could take that song and do what with it? We could make it a new song. And we could take that song of testimony and make it a song of praise. How can we do that? Because we could say, "You are Lord. You are..." I'm not going to sing it again. But you could just change that and make it to God instead of from God. So we see that they were singing a new song. We see also some other traits about this 144,000. They are the ones who have not defiled themselves with women since they remained virgins. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. You know what we see about these 144,000? They have remained single. Paul wrote that, yeah, he could have gotten married, but he wanted to remain single. Why? Because it allowed him to concentrate and focus more on the work that God had called him to do. And that's what we see with this 144,000 as well. Another thing that we see is this. The Bible says, "These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. They were redeemed from humanity as the first fruits for God and the Lamb. No lie was found in their mouths. They are blameless." And then chapter 14 ends with this. You were waiting for those words, weren't you? But it's going to take a little longer than what you'd hoped. Chapter 14 ends with this. It ends with four angels making a proclamation. And here's the proclamation these four angels make. If we look at verse 9 or verse 6, it says this. "Then I saw another angel," and I'm going to read down to verse 7. "Then I saw another angel flying high overhead with the eternal gospel to announce to the inhabitants of the earth, to every nation, tribe, language, and people. He spoke with a loud voice, 'Fear God and give Him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship the one who made heaven and earth, the sea and the springs of water. What is the message from that angel? The message from this first angel is judgment has come. Judgment has come. But he opens it up here by telling the gospel. The gospel is not bad news. I've heard, and you have too, I've heard preachers get up and, man, they'll preach a fire and brimstone message. And after that message, some people will walk out and say, boy, he really preached the gospel today. Well, not necessarily. Because what is the gospel? What is the message that is being proclaimed here by this angel? The Bible said is the gospel. We learned Wednesday night what the gospel is. The gospel is referred to in the Bible as good news. Why? Because it is the news that Jesus Christ came to this earth, he died on a cross, he was buried, and he rose again. That is good news. But it can't be good news if there's no backdrop of the bad news. And the bad news is that judgment is coming. And that is the proclamation. Let me give you an example. If I were to get up here tonight and say this to you, your house is not on fire, what would that mean to you? Well, it wouldn't mean anything. You'd look at me kind of weird, like, what is he talking about? Because there's no context to that. But if I were to come in here tonight and say this, I saw two fire trucks turn down your road, turn down your street toward your house. And then I said, but guess what? Your house is not on fire. That would be good news. But it would be in the backdrop of the bad news. The bad news is somebody's house is on fire. The good news is it was not your house that is on fire. The bad news is judgment is coming. But the good news is that God has prepared a way for us to escape that judgment. And that is the message that this first angel is delivering here in chapter 14. Let's look at the next angel. Verse 8 says, and another second angel followed saying, I love this part, don't you? Because it says here, it has fallen, Babylon the Great has fallen. Twice it mentions the same thing, Babylon has fallen. Continue with that same verse. She made all the nations drink the wine of her sexual immorality, which brings wrath. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this tonight, because when we get to chapters 17 and 18 of Revelation, we're going to talk a lot about Babylon. But I do want to ask this question. What religion do you suppose is going to be when it's all said and done? What religion in this world will survive, and during the tribulation, that will be the last religion that will be on earth? If you had to guess, what religion would you say survives all of it? It's not Christianity. What religion would you say survives all of it and makes it to the end? In chapter 17 and 18 of Revelation, we see that the world gets so tired of this, they just completely destroy it. What is it? Well, it's not Islam. It's not Buddhism. It's not Hinduism. It's not any of the religions that you think it would be. You know what it is? It's humanism. Because that is exactly what Babylon is. When people built the Tower of Babel in the Old Testament, what was that? That was our attempt. That was man's attempt. That was people's attempt to get to God and to be God. Babylon has always represented that. Man's attempt to be and to get to God. And right here, this angel is proclaiming that Babylon is going to fall. And it's great, the fall is going to be great, believe me. When we get to chapter 17 and 18, we'll see. But it says it twice because there's two tenets to Babylon that we're going to see later. First of all is the religion. The religion is going to be completely devoured by the people. The second thing that we see related to Babylon here is, again, the economics. The whole economic system that man has tried to build is going to completely be annihilated. So that is what the angel is proclaiming. The second angel proclaims that Babylon is going to fall. Verse 9, we see the third angel, and I know I need to get through it here. Verse 9 says, and another, a third angel, followed them and spoke with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in its image and receives a mark on his forehead or on his hand, he will also drink the wine of God's wrath, which is poured full strength into the cup of his anger. He will be tormented with fire and sulfur in the sight of the holy angels and in the sight of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment will go up forever and ever. There is no rest day or night for those who worship the beast in its image, or anyone who receives the mark of its name. This calls for endurance from the saints who keep God's commands and their faith in Jesus. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying, "Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, so they will rest from their labors, since their works follow them." The message from the third angel is this: escape God's wrath. Escape God's wrath. And this got my attention, because I want to read for you verse 10 again. It says, "He will also drink the wine of God's wrath, which is poured full strength into the cup of His anger." Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about the words that it's saying there in verse 10, the full strength of God's anger? I realize right now you and I live in a world that has never seen ever the full strength of God's anger. God's anger has always been tempered with His mercy. It's always been tempered with His love. But we've never seen the full strength of God's anger. I mean, I got to tell you tonight, if you were to offer me, if somebody were to come up to me and offer me a bottle of arsenic in its pure form and say, "Hey, drink this," I don't think I'd want to do that. But if somebody were to offer me a gallon of water and said, "We're going to put a drop of arsenic in here," would you be more willing to drink a gallon of water with just a drop of arsenic in it than you would full-strength arsenic? I don't think I'd want to do either. But if I had the choice, I think I'd rather do the one that's watered down and very diluted. But here we see at this time in history, the angel is proclaiming that we need to escape God's wrath. And what is God's wrath? God's wrath is the full strength of His judgment. There is no mercy. There is no love. It is the full strength of His judgment. And as I was reading this and studying this, I was thinking to myself, can we even fathom what hell is really like? I mean, I realize that the Bible writers, when they wrote about hell, they tried to imagine the worst possible thing that they could imagine. I mean, being burning alive, that's why they called it hell, fire, damnation. They called it, you know, a place where you're in fire and you just always seem like you're burning up like that. They tried to think of the worst possible thing that they could think of in their language to describe that. But I don't think we even hit it. I don't even think we got close to it, because we still have people joking, "You know what, it's going to be one great party. One day we're going to be able to go and drink whatever we want. We're going to be able to go and eat what we want. We'll stay up all night. We'll listen to AC/DC and Lynyrd Skynyrd and just have a great time." And we have no clue as to what hell will truly be like. I mean, after all, hell was not made for human inhabitation. Hell was not made for that. God even said that in Matthew 24. Hell was not made for people to be in. It was made for Satan and his demons to reside in. But people will find themselves there because of the rejection of God. And so the angel is saying, we need to escape the wrath of God. And finally, the last angel that we see right here is this in verse 14. "Then I looked, and there was a white cloud, and one like the Son of Man was seated on the cloud with a golden crown on his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. Another angel came out of the temple crying out in a loud voice to the one who was seated on the cloud, 'Use your sickle and reap, for the time to reap has come, since the harvest of the earth is ripe.' So the one seated on the cloud swung his sickle over the earth, and the earth was harvested. Then another angel who also had a sharp sickle came out of the temple in heaven. Yet another angel who had authority came from the altar, and he called with a loud voice to the one who had the sharp sickle, 'Use your sharp sickle and gather the clusters of grapes from the vineyard of the earth, because its grapes have ripened.' So the angel swung his sickle at the earth and gathered the grapes from the vineyard of the earth, and he threw them into the great winepress of God's wrath. Then the press was trampled outside the city, and blood flowed out of the press up to the horses' bridles for about 180 miles. The last proclamation that this angel is saying is that it's time to reap the harvest. It is time to reap the harvest. And if you want to know exactly what this section of Revelation chapter 14 is about, Jesus told us in Matthew 13. Because Jesus told a story of a farmer that went out into a field and he planted wheat. And sometime in the night, his enemy came in and planted in the middle of that wheat weeds. And all of a sudden, as things began to grow, as the wheat began to grow, the weeds began to grow. And the workers of this good farmer looked at the things that were growing and said, "You know what? You want us to go out there and pull up all the weeds?" And the good farmer said, "No, let them grow together. When it's all said and done, we'll all harvest it together. We'll separate the wheat from the weeds, and we'll take the weeds and throw them into the fire." And this is exactly what this proclamation is about, that it's time to reap the harvest and separate the wheat from the weeds. You know, I think about what we've looked at, and I know these past couple chapters, again, have been a part of Revelation that can be disturbing, you know. But I think about this, and I think, you know, years ago, there was when people were pioneers and they were moving west and they were building homes out on the prairie, one of the hazards that people had during that time were fires, wildfires that would spread across the plains, you know. And a lot of times, if people saw that smoke on the horizon, they knew that before too long that fire was going to come across there. And a lot of times it did. It burned up people's homestead. It killed people as they were out there on the prairie. So one of the things I'm told that they did to protect themselves against that is if they saw smoke on the horizon, if they saw a fire coming, they would go set a fire around their property and burn in a circle around their property and put the fire out. And then when the wildfire got to that part that had already been burned up, guess what? It didn't go any further. It would not go on a place that had already been burned up. I think about that, and I think about that is exactly what we're talking about when it comes to the Bible. Because when God's wrath comes down on sin, He will not go to where it's already been dealt with. And it's been dealt with by what Jesus Christ has done on the cross. And that is the confidence that we have as we face what we're facing in the future. In Revelation.
Hey, this is Eddie Duke, pastor at Panther Creek Baptist Church. I hope this message was a blessing for you today. I want to let you know that we here at Panther Creek are a small church that are looking to make a big impact on our neighbors in our community with the love of Christ. If you're looking for a church home with which to serve and connect with, we would love to have you join us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 for Sunday school and 10:30 for church. We'd also love to have you join us on Sunday evenings at 6:30, but if you can't join us, we hope you'll tune in every week and listen to us. Have a fantastic day.